Welcome in. It is Charlotte Soccer Show. John Hayes, Danny Brams. Danny, it is a Tuesday morning. It's March 4th. We're coming off a 3-point Saturday, a home win. Charlotte FC takes down Atlanta United in the home opener in front of 51,000 fans. Danny, are you still riding the high coming off of that epic performance on Saturday?
I feel great, Johnny. It was an awesome way to spend the day. It was an awesome match. It was a perfect return, perfect home opener, perfect almost everything. The performance was great. The times were great. We had awesome times. Can't wait to talk about all of that. The guys who we needed to see perform well performed well. Goals came from the sources that we're hoping to see goals continue to come from all season. So that's nice to get some guys off this to an early season start. No real contribution from Patrick Ojemong, but everybody else was in it to win it and making things happen. And in the end, Charlotte FC spent part of Saturday to the early kickoff at the top of the league. You know, we were top of the league on Saturday afternoon after that win. And now down knocked a few spots because a few clubs have 6 points from two matches. But 4 points from two matches, it feels really good. It's a good start, as Dean Smith will say.
Yeah, and by the way, there's a match against Inter Miami this weekend.
Whew. Showdown.
So we're moving on very quickly, but we're going to look back first because we had a great day on Saturday. I think, truthfully, you might not get a better spring Saturday than that. What an epic and beautiful day, a Charlotte day it was on Saturday for this match. 224 kick, to be honest.
Yeah, 224. We spotted that time. Yeah, for sure.
We knew that was happening. It was a great afternoon match. So here's what we're going to do on the show today. We're going to hear from Dino on the performance. We're going to hear from Wilfried Zaha. He makes his Charlotte FC debut. The new dad flying back from London to get the job done for the crown. We're going to hear, specifically, I want to hear from you because you were in the supporter section. We were at the Lowe's tap room, and there was a lot of people waiting to get in the stadium. There's a lot of people in the supporter section, so I'm going to hear from you about that as well. But we started our day at Triple C. It was the perfect launch pad to get the Saturday going, and it was our pregame, and then we head over to Hopfly and. When we got out of the Uber at Hopfly, to see that party the way it was like by far the best party in town. Like there was, I guarantee there wasn't a better party than Hopfly on Saturday in this city. Like, show me it. Yeah, show me the videos. Show me the pictures. If you were at a better party than Hopfly, and I'm not gassing Hopfly up. I'm not. But when I got out of that Uber, Danny, I was shocked at the party that was happening at Hopfly. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I was expecting maybe, 50 some people. It was more like 300. You know, it was insane how many people were packed all over the parking lot, packing the bars. You had to go to like the outdoor bars just to be able to get a drink most of the time. Mint City Music was there, bombing some great tracks and great tunes. There were games in the parking lot. The upstairs was full, the downstairs was full, the outside was full, the parking lot was full. Great party thrown by the people at Hotfly. They do good things. You know, we had, like you mentioned, we had our pregame to the pregame at Triple C, had an early beer at Triple C, saw some dogs get adopted. That was really cool. Headed down to Hotfly. Hotfly was hopping. And it was good to get a few brews in the old tank and then head over to the stadium and get back to one of my favorite bars in town, which is the Lowe's Tap Room, the supporters bar right when you walk in. Johnny, it was a little tough to get in the stadium. It was the rare situation where there were long lines to get through the ticket taker spot. They closed the wings. It seemed like they had less or they had fewer entry ways to get in, and it led to a little bit of a long line situation. But, hey, what can you do?
I don't know if David Tepper is following the Elon Musk Dodge blueprint here. But clearly, the stadium wasn't staffed properly ahead of this match. And that usually, when we walk in to the supporter section gate, all gates are open. That was right. Not the case on Saturday, which I found kind of strange. Expecting 50,000 plus fans and not all gates open. I thought that was clearly a cost-cutting look from this squad. And I think it was... It was a bad look for the fan base. I mean, it's really not. It's not like we waited a long time. It's not like it was a huge issue. I just
20 minutes.
Yeah, I just thought it was something very strange, considering there's going to be about 18, 20,000 at some of these games this season. So let's just get the first one right. But they couldn't do that. I think we'll get into that, I think, in a bit. I want to hear your thoughts on that. I want to hear your thoughts on the crowded supporter section as well. You still have your supporter season ticket.
Yeah, and there was a little bit of an issue there that we will get into, but let's focus on the good things first, for sure. You're right. We'll talk a little bit about – I've got some thoughts on the attendance number as well.
So we shouldn't talk about the first half then?
The first half was a little rough. The first half was all about two cagey sides kind of figuring each other out. And Dino overall praised the performance. He was much happier with the performance of this club this match than – on the season opener against Seattle, right? We snuck away with a draw there, but Dino was blasting the team and said they played horrible against Seattle on the road. He was much happier with this performance. Let's get him up. He had some good things to say about the performance overall, and I want to hear what you have to react to when it comes to some of the midfield, because you were not impressed with the midfield, the way they were doing things, especially in the first half, being slow to make passes and slow to make defensive stops happen. But here's what Dino had to say.
Yeah, it gives everybody a lift when you've got quality players. But our performance was better today. It wasn't a top performance, but it was a better performance than last week. And after the poor performance last week and getting a point on the road, you know, you win today and all of a sudden it's you know, a good start rather than a poor start. Thought, as I say, it was a good performance. I thought the midfield too were excellent today. Ashley Westwood and Bram Bronico, they snuffed out any danger in front of the back four really quickly. They went and pressed really well when they needed to, and they had really good balance. You know, I thought BB especially was excellent today.
Dino liked the balance.
Well, I think if you listen closely to what he said there, Danny, he talked about defensive performance by Westwood and Bram Bronico. He didn't talk about anything on the offensive side with those two. And that was the point. And I think if you go back earlier in that clip, Dean is being pretty honest with the fan base so far, because the truth of the matter is three of the first four halves of the season have been absolutely terrible. And this second half against Atlanta has really put a shine on a, you know what? Mm-hmm. And that own goal late at Seattle has also contributed to making these the first two games of the season fruitful in terms of points. But I'm with Dino here. These first two games have not even been close to good enough. And the quality has been absolutely poor. Wilfred Zaha had pointed that out at halftime. I would have loved to be a fly on the wall at halftime and have heard Wilfred Zaha have a go at his teammates and just let them know, hey, if we're going to play here, we got to go quicker. We've got to go faster. And I think this is the first time. What you're seeing here, Danny, Ashley Westwood has been great for this club. He's a captain. He says all the right things. He brings young players along. But he doesn't necessarily publicly have a go at anybody. I think he does so privately, and I think he's a good motivator. But I think Wilfred Zaha being injected into this squad, I think Dean Smith for the first time has somebody to look at and say, yeah, we can do better than this. And I think he can look at the rest of the squad and continue to say that. So I am absolutely thrilled that Dino's reaction to that game was not good enough, because he's absolutely right.
Yeah, and it was the second half did turn things around, and it happened after having a go. And I can't give you a fly on the wall, Johnny. I can't make you a fly on the wall in that locker room, but I can give you some insight from the man himself, because Wilf Zaha addressed the whole concept. He explained kind of to one of the local reporters. It's kind of funny you're hearing here. He's like, can you tell me what you mean by having a go? So let's listen to Wilf on exactly how he took that mantle on that you're talking about, John, and took the reins that Dean was hoping some player would take, and sort of grabbed his teammates by the scruff of the neck a little bit here.
I had a little go at a few people because I want to win. I just thought we just need to speed up what we're doing. And once we did speed it up, I don't think they could live with us in the second half.
Can you explain a little more what you said about, did you say you had a, I couldn't quite hear you, had a go, or is there something like you were talking to some of your teammates, you mean, about, you know,
oh, when I say I had a go is constructive criticism, but shouting it. Basically, so yeah, like I said, we just need to pass the ball faster. The time that you take if you take 10 seconds on the ball, by the time you give it to me, there'll be a guy stood right here. So if you take 2 seconds, it gives me the opportunity to get the ball in turn and decide what I'm going to do. So yeah, that's what I came in and said. And then, yeah, I think we just did it, and then it made a difference.
Constructive criticism, but shouting it, you know, you got to love it. Like, sometimes you can't be nice in this thing, because like he said, I want to win. The reason I yelled at my team is because I want to win. And that something happened in that second, in that locker room at halftime that turned the team around. Because you're right. In the first half, Johnny, I was watching and I saw things I liked, which I saw these, what I would call Premier League passing connections, Tim Ream to Ashley Westwood to Wilf Zaha. And you're thinking, you know, this is a touch of class. These guys are making it happen, but it wasn't happening quickly enough. And it's something that I've always harped on, like, make the pass, make the pass, make the pass. First time pass it. Don't dribble so much. Like, anyone who follows soccer, watches both Premier League and MLS, you can see the difference in the level there. And the best MLS clubs are the ones who move quicker, who move more decisively, make it look like what they're doing. And as Wilf Zaha says, when I receive a pass sooner, then I can decide what to do. It makes your pass look better. Maybe you passed a less perfect pass because you didn't quite take as much time to set yourself up. I'm going to do this. Da, da, da. But because the pass was delivered quicker and sooner and received more quickly and able to be dealt with, it makes the pass look better. So you can make a less perfect pass, but if you make it quicker, it's more effective. And I think Wilf knows that. And I think most football players and the elite football players certainly know that around the globe. I think it's something that we struggle to see consistently in MLS. And like I said, the best MLS clubs are the ones who can do that and who can internalize that. It's not important to make the perfect pass. It's important to make the quickest pass so the person receiving it knows what to do with it and can Absolutely. Do something with it.
No doubt about it. And it's really funny. I think you saw Zaha's sense of humor, I think, in that press conference. I think you saw his willingness to be open with the media, which I think could be a really, really good thing for Charlotte FC this season. I hope we're not just getting Wilfried Zaha at the microphone because he's new, because this is his debut for Charlotte FC. I really hope he continues to give press conferences. I really hope he continues to give interviews because Wilfried Zaha is the player that can turn Charlotte into not just a soccer city, right, but a soccer city with high expectations. Not just table finish, goals, quality of play. I think this is something that Dean has been preaching for the last year, and I'll give Dean Smith nothing but credit. He never really had a go until recently. I think his first year, Dean, it was really about getting settled in, understanding, having realistic expectations that his roster was full of players who weren't necessarily at the level that Dean Smith has managed
right
in his career. I think at some point early in his career, but when you're talking about Premier League clubs, when you're talking about championship clubs, or just the talent on Charlotte FC's roster, I think Dean recognized quickly that he needed to get some transfers in. He has now Wilfried Zaha. Now he has Pep Biao. He has Leal Abada as well. I mean, things are happening for Dean Smith now, and I think he's starting to feel it. Tim Ream, one of those players as well. So not just has the play improved for Charlotte FC in the second half, I think the rhetoric behind the microphone has improved as well, and I'm fascinated by that for sure.
Yeah, and we are going to look at those goals here that were created once the second half started going. But let's hear one more time from Dean here real quick just about his take on after Wilf had that go and how things were different in the second half compared to the first against Atlanta United.
I always felt that if their defenders put themselves in foot races with our players, we'd have every chance of getting in behind them. And, you know, we did that. You know, you saw the quality that Wilf has got. Liel ran away from them. And, you know, for the second goal, made a really good decision. You know, he couldn't actually cross it at that time to Patrick, and he made the keeper make a save, and Wilf did what good players do, followed it up and, you know, showed the quality finish that, you know, is him. So, Pep following up and scoring is a big bonus as well for us.
That's a lot of happy rhetoric right there about moving and making runs in behind.
I need to make one point before we really dive into this second half success. We've got these highlights coming up, and I know we don't want to talk about the first half, but there's one thing that I'll mention about the first half is that Miguel Almiron teared us apart. and Atlanta was very unlucky to be tied at halftime. Miguel Almiron, he was a 7.7 on SofaScore, without a goal, without an assist. He was absolutely brilliant, and in my opinion, he was the best player on display this weekend.
Yeah, and they had a couple good chances. Laddy Lath, one of their big DP signings, along with Almiron, had a clear cut, you know, chance in the box that he sent wide that might have forced Kleenan to make a save. Kleenan made a nice save on a play created by Almiron in the first half, but it's one you'd expect him to save. But yeah, Almiron easily the MVP of the first half, but then, you know, Wilf Zaha and Pep Biel got going and took over in the second half and thankfully made it just a great day for the crowd supporter, the home supporters. And they got it going quickly. The goals were scored in the 47th and 52nd minute, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So it was nice to get 49th and 54th, excuse me. So it was really nice to get these goals like quickly to see those results. Like having the go had a very immediate result, and you could see it. We're going to check out the first goal here and then we'll break it down for you.
Can they keep the ball out of their own net? Taken here by Wilfried Zaha. Zaha, top of the box, able to play this ahead. Go! Charlotte is on the board. It's Pep Biel. 4 minutes into the half. And with Zaha in the middle of the construction of it all, a goal worthy of a crown. Wow. They're on their feet at Bank of America Stadium.
Well, transition, transition, transition. We said it's all about teams playing the ball forward quicker because that's when teams are out of shape. We see this because if it Williams is too high, he's struggling to get back. Then Zaha finds himself on the ball. He's just brought down on the edge of the area. And then the right man at the right place at the right time, Biel is there to put the ball in the back of the net. But that is simplicity is genius. Defending 1 minute, but getting the ball forward quickly to the point Atlanta could not organize their back four. They're stretching, they're mistiming their headers, and here's the end result for you. 1-0 to Charlotte.
Pep Biel acquired on loan from Olympiacos last year.
Pretty nice long ball forward from Andrew Privet. Patrick Ajimong makes the most of it, gets it into some space for Wilf to come in and move quickly. Wilf draws three defenders. Has a little bit of a go himself. I think that was a shot, not a pass. And we'll hear from Wilf, his take on whether or not that should be counted as assist in just a second. But that's the goal. Let's hear what you think about it, Johnny. Then we'll hear from Dino and Pep about the gaffer and the goal scorer.
Well, there's one tactical point that I want to make here for sure, and it's the fact that Wilfried Zaha is wearing the number 10 on his back. And I think in the first half, he was playing out wide on the left-hand side. And I expected him to play wide, but I didn't expect him to play that wide. And yeah. when this goal happened, it wasn't a surprise to me that it happened because Wilfried Zaha was in the center of the pitch. I think this is where he's going to make his greatest impact. I think he needs to, and Dean Smith needs to work on keeping him closer to the center of the pitch while also getting some freedom on the wing. I don't think Dean wants Zaha out as wide as he was in that first half. When Wilf is going to be in the center of the pitch, I think good things are going to happen because, like you said, three defenders, four defenders mm-hmm. that he has to deal with, and Pep Biel just gets to run in behind and have an easy goal. I mean, that to me is exactly how this offense should work. And for what it's worth, I saw that deflection right away, and it wasn't an assist for me. Never was.
Well, I mean, full disclosure, we were still at the supporters' bar. That goal happened so quick. We were still finishing up our beers and walking back towards the stands. In the tunnels, the celebration could be felt all throughout the entire building. It was amazing, and you did call it out, John. You definitely did call that out. It's interesting that the tactical tension that might arise, because I agree with you that Wilf looked pretty nice moving in the center there. Zaha described his own game when he at his introductory press conference. You know, go back and watch Decoding the Presser on the YouTube feed. He said he likes to stay out wide. He's like, I stay out wide left. Liel is a winger who cuts in more. So Zaha said that he himself said he's not one to cut in as much as like a Liel Abada will. But in that case, it kind of had to happen. And thankfully,
it's easy to say that, Danny. It's easy to say that when you've never played an MLS game before.
Fair point.
You get on the pitch and you realize that it's going to be out wide is like really not where the action happens in MLS. All the best players come through the middle.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the next few matches for sure. That's like your tactical eye is always trained on stuff like that. So something to watch is how central does Zaha get here in the future? As for Pep, as for the magician of Mecklenburg, he delivered Johnny on the spot, you know, Pepe on the spot in the right place, right time. Here's Dino and Pep both talking about Biel's performance and the fact that one great thing about him scoring in the home match opener is he missed a lot of the preseason with a knee injury, as you'll hear them both address.
Pep's an excellent player. You know, he gets into really good pockets. He's got really good balance. He receives the ball really well. He releases the ball really well. And, you know, he understands the game. So you can see why he was where he was for the goal. You know, he just sensed that's where the ball was going to finish up. And I thought his performance was better. He's getting fitter. You know, he missed a large chunk of preseason with a knee injury. He's not certainly 100% yet, but he's getting there. Thank you.
It's very good for me to get a bit confidence because it was a bad period last month, but now I'm good. I'm getting better day by day, so I'm happy to help the team.
What did you see? Zaha had the ball, you know, defenders crashing him.
Yeah, I see. I was alone because the defender go with to close Zaha, so I see clear the space.
I see clear the space. I knew you'd like. I knew that line would put a smile on your face, Johnny. I see clear the space. What you know, Zaha's constructive criticism, but shouting it is clearly the most memorable takeaway line from the post game sound. But Pep with that little cheeky grin and saying, "I see clear the space." That's for the true fans. That's for the people. You know, that's the deep dive. That's the album track that really makes the record a full winner. So good stuff from the magician.
Yeah, it's like Wilf was the A side and Pep was the B side.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming off of this weekend for sure. Yep. Everybody knows the good stuff is on the B side. When I hear, it's funny because Dino like legitimately cannot say Pep Biel's name without mentioning the pockets. He did it again there. Like he literally will mention it every single time. It's so funny.
So true.
And Pep was in the pocket there. He literally was in Brad Guzan's left pocket. And he climbed right into the back of the net. Fantastic performance. I think having someone like Pep Biel and in this squad right now is a very, very good thing because of what we just talked about. Wilfried Zaha is the star, but there's another player here with a lot of ability, Danny, to show up in the right spots, to find the space like he talked about, and use both feet. Look at that run, straight into the area, right into the penalty area, and a one-time finish. And that's key. And Patrick Aujamang, I know, somebody that is not being lauded after the performance on Saturday. It was easy to forget. But if you rewind that back, Danny, Wilf gets a lot of credit for this goal, but look what Pat's doing. He took two defenders there, and by the way, he was in a position right there to receive a square ball and slot it right into the back of the net, onside, mind you. So while everyone's going to talk about Wilfried Zaha and Pep Biel during this goal, let's give Patrick Aujamang some due because he's in the right areas as well.
Yeah, and watch when they go to the replay here. When they show the long, long pass forward from Privet, you're going to see it's a little bit of a pinball, but that's what you do when you have Patrick Aujamang up top. You can afford to send those 50-50 balls because you know Pat's going to get the touch that creates a moment of magic here that we're about to see it. And, you know, I mean, Privet just in stride, super long ball, you know, and bounces off the defender's head. But they're terrified of Aujamang, you know, they're so afraid of what Pat can do that they make mistakes and, worked out pretty well. As for the quote-unquote assist, Dean Smith called it an assist, but I think Wilf Zaha himself knew better. So let's hear what Zaha said about whether or not
that should... I didn't realize that. I didn't know he agreed with me on this.
Yeah. Dean's like, oh, a goal and assist for Zaha on his debut is pretty nice, right? But here's what Wilf himself had to say.
I'll be honest, it wasn't a pass. Okay. I've gone to shoot, okay. And he's jumped in front of my foot, so I've hit the ball. So that's why it's carried on going to Pep, but I've booted him as well. So yeah, it was a weird one, but I can't complain. We scored, so yeah, I'm happy.
I love this guy. I mean, he's honest. And yeah, I feel like there's a lot of players that would be like, oh yeah, I meant to do that.
Right.
Like, nah, didn't mean to do that. But hey, it worked out.
One thing Zaha did mean to do, though, was score a wonderful goal just minutes after Pep put us up 1-0. Zaha came through with a nice goal. Let's check that one out to make it 2-0.
To play it away. Opportunity here for Charlotte. They'll get three into the attack. They have Ajimon making a run, but a save made by Guzan. Follow-up try and goal! It's Zaha! A new chapter has begun in Charlotte. And Wilfried Zaha factoring into both goals. The home side is up by 2. Welcome to America.
Well, we said how good Edwards had been, but his naivety in this situation leads to the goal. But once again, it's Charlotte. It's all about get the ball forward quickly, get it forward quickly, play on the second balls, or can you win that initial ball? And that's exactly what they do down this right-hand side. And it's really good play initially. You just see the ball's now played. Eventually, Biel goes himself. It's a save from Guzan. But then the finish from Zaha.
Just like Dean drew it up, Liel running down the sidelines, get the ball bounces over the defender's head. Liel's kind of able to scoot around him and get on the full stride into some space. And then you heard Dean earlier in this show, we played the Dean soundbar. He was like, yeah, Liel did the right thing where he didn't see a square ball that he could make to Patrick. So he made the keeper work, did just that. And Zaha on the first time finish is like, that's so clutch as well. You know, is that it's just like taking it on the first time finish there and not feel like you have to take a touch and take it down. It's that like a lot of MLS players take that down and try to like move into the space there. Wilf's like, no, I'm just going to boot it. I'm just going to take it as it's falling to me and just curl it, you know, in swinger, right where the goalkeeper literally has no chance to get it.
This is exactly why you sign designated players, because this goal is illustrative of two players who are on DP contracts who are unbelievably skilled. And I think you saw the best of Liel Abada here, a driving run into the box and a quick shot. Phenomenal work on frame, by the way, something that didn't happen in the first half, no shots in general. but Liel Abada gets one on frame here, makes a driving run down that right-hand side. That's when Abada is at his best right here, Danny. He's making this driving run. He's got his head up. He knows that Zaha's there. He's going to take it on himself. And then what you see from Zaha here, and the reason why you sign designated players is so you can have that touch of class. So mm-hmm. You can have that one-time finish. So you can go on the full volley. Even though he probably didn't catch it as cleanly as he wanted to, that's how good he is, right?
Clean enough,
It's like a golf shot, Danny. It'll work.
Right.
It might not be your best contact of the day, but you're good enough to catch it where you need to and slot it into the back of the net. It's a beautiful goal. DP's making an impact here for Charlotte FC. And quite frankly, it's why this club has struggled in its first, eras, if you will. The Miguel Angel Ramirez era, the Christian Lotanzio era. These players were not existent on those squads.
Right.
So when you look back, yeah, you want to be critical of how maybe some of those seasons went. But when you see how full the cupboard is now, you kind of realize the hand that they were dealt in the beginning stages of this project.
Zaha is just that touch of class. He's just that much better. I don't see Karol Swiderski scoring that goal like that, especially not with his right foot being so famously left-footed. He maybe could have pulled that off with his left. Enzo Capetti maybe could score a goal like that, you know, if it all was right. But I don't think he would even have the confidence to take it first time like that without taking a touch. Almost any other MLS player, I'm certain, like tries to take a touch on that and touch it down and like get some perfect shot. Wilf said, no, I've got the keeper on his heels. He's just made a big save. He hasn't regained his balance. I need to strike right now while I can. And yeah, it turned into a beautiful thing. It goes to what Wilf was saying about just having to go. Like he had a good, like the goals were scored not necessarily off of what he was talking about, because he talked about, oh, we need quicker passes so I can make decisions and make turns and stuff like that. These goals were scored in transition and the run of play. These were goals scored off of long balls and punishing defender mistakes. But like, it's the whole package. It's like the whole, like we could show other highlights of nice quick passing sequences that happened in the second half also. YouTube would probably kick us off for showing previously unpublished MLS clips. So we're not going to do that. But
it has happened before.
Yeah, it has happened before. But we can show those ones because they're published elsewhere on YouTube. But it's all a mentality and an attitude, and it's the total game. The goals look nice. The goals are what get the glory. The goals create the points and the win and the great feeling all around the stadium. You saw some of those crowd shots. But Wilf really was the total package. And after the match, Dean, when he was praising Wilf Zaha, he was happy about the offensive contributions, and he called it an assist even though it wasn't. But listen to what he praised most about Wilf, because he actually shouted out Zaha's defense more than anything else.
First half, you could see he was getting into the rhythm of the game. You know, rhythm's a big thing at time for players. You know, there was a couple snapping at his heels a few times, and, you know, he'd give it away a couple of times as well. But his positioning defensively was really good, and that, for me, made him a team player. You know, what he does without the ball, we know what he can do with the ball. You know, he can score goals like that. He can make runs like he did for the first goal. But the defensive side of the game was really good from him as well.
The biggest question mark on Wilfred Zaha coming to Charlotte FC and Major League Soccer was, does this guy still have it, and is his head still in it? Because this is a guy who literally dominated the Premier League for 3 years on a club that was not – Crystal Palace was not a top side.
Oh, well,
but Wilf Zaha
– the South Londoners that watch this show, they're going to be upset.
Sorry, Palace fans. I'm just trying to say they were better when they had Zaha, trust me, and Benteke. My point is that this is a guy who was a danger man that all the league in the Premier League had to worry about, you know, and he was not playing like on a Man United or a Chelsea or a Man City or Arsenal or something like that. So he spent a few years in the wilderness in Turkey and in France, not really making it happen. And so the question is, yeah, this guy is good, but does he want to be here? Does he have the commitment? Does he have what it takes to resurrect his career and become a superstar in MLS? And after one match, the answer has to be yes. And it's not just because of the goal contributions, but it's because of the commitment. And as Dean shouted out there, the defensive commitment and the ability to be a team player and to want to make his teammates all better. The motivation was the question mark. And after one match, the answer is a resounding yes.
Some fun facts, I think, about Crystal Palace. And maybe we can ask Zaha about this, Danny. Elton John, Crystal Palace is Elton John's club.
Are you kidding me?
He was pretty front-facing, and I'm sure has attended some of those matches when Wilf played. I'd be curious to see if he had a chat with Elton John in the owner's box. And, of course, Rebecca Lowe. Everybody knows Rebecca Lowe on NBC Sports. South Londoner herself, grew up as a Palace fan as well.
Best in the business. We need Rebecca on the show, and we need Sir Elton on the show. We need those both need to be specialized episodes.
I've got a feeling we've got a chance to get one of those two.
Yeah, and you know my lyrical mind, Johnny. I instantly go to, I guess that's why they call them the Mighty Black and Blues. Goals on the pitch, and we share them with you.
That's pretty good.
All the supporters drinking the porters. I don't know. They sell porters in Bank of America Stadium. I was kind of freestyling there, but don't. I love that. Is my favorite Elton John song by far. I guess that's why they call it the blues. So.
Amazing. Well done. And right off the top of your head, impressive there. Maybe we can get that sung in the supporter section.
I guess that's the Mighty Black and Blues, goals on the pitch. Yeah, exactly. It'd be great. The thing about Wilf, the thing that makes me feel even like more confident in his sort of long-term commitment, his ability to resurrect things here, and why I didn't quite have as many questions is when I heard out that he was about to become a father again. I know there was – I'm with you, Johnny. I think the club was clumsy in the way that they let that whole news bomb linger again in the opening week against Seattle, and how they didn't let the people know until like 45 minutes before the game kicked off that Wilf was not going to be available in Seattle. But that does not mean, like, pointing that out, saying that the club made a mistake in the way they communicated the message, is in no way diminishing the importance of like him going and being there for his daughter's birth. We certainly support that as well. And he addressed it a little bit after the match. It's not his first child. I think he has another child before, but now he has his daughter. And you talked about how Wilf, you were impressed with how open and reflective he is in pressers on some of the earlier answers. Wait to hear this, because this is about as open and reflective as it gets.
I would call it hectic, to be honest, about my mentality is obviously it's non-negotiable being there for my daughter's birth, but then at the same time, work is work. So I'm there for my daughter, but then I know that I've got to go back and do what I've got to do. So my missus understands and everyone understands. So yeah, I don't complain, I just get on with it. Yeah, 100%. I do this for my family, I do this for my kids. And obviously having my daughter, just, I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just a very good moment for me. And it's just like, I managed to witness that. So going into the game, I was just happy and just excited to get on with it.
Pretty good for the mentality to be able to witness, you know, what's a couple transatlantic flights inside of a week when you've got that big of a boost, you know, Zuri Zaha, born into the world. Welcome, Zuri. You've got big things ahead of you. We sure hope. And shout out to inspiring your dad. In just a few days of life, you've already inspired one of the best performances of the 2025 MLS season that we're likely to see. So excellent work, Zuri. Excellent work, Wilfred. And congrats to the whole family. We love to see it.
It's perspective. That's what it's all about, for sure. And I think Zaha right now has some really strong perspective. Hopefully he's getting a break this week. Hopefully he's in training, of course, keeping that body right, but mentally, hopefully getting a break before the club heads down to Miami on Friday.
Yeah.
Maybe Saturday, because it is a Sunday game, right?
It's a Sunday game, yep. Yeah, I'm not Saturday. Sure exactly when the travel is happening.
But hey, one thing I wanted to ask you about, were you surprised that Zaha went the full 90?
I was a little surprised, because I even would not have been shocked if he didn't start. I was even telling people at Hot Fly before the game, I was like, you never know, maybe he won't start and he'll sub in because of the travel and all that. Ended up he started, he went the full 90, which was definitely a surprise to me. I thought he would get a curtain call even at least, you know, with like 87, but he wanted to be out there. And he addressed it after the match in kind of a funny little way. So let's listen to that. And I'd love your reaction to his take here as well.
He told you he wanted 90 minutes?
No, he didn't tell me. I just said to him, how are you feeling? And for the last 15 to 20 minutes, he said he was okay. So listen, he knows his body better than I do. So, you know, he had every right to stay on.
The gaffer kept on asking me, and I asked him, like, do I look like I'm tired or injured? And he was like, no, I was just wondering. I was just like, I looked at the clock and it was 80 minutes, and I thought, since I'm here, I might as well finish the rest of the game. So, yeah, I just thought, it's a good game, I feel good, and I just want to win as a team. So, yeah, I wanted to stay on.
Wilf the comedian, man.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, though, like this post game press conference is absolutely hilarious.
I look tired, Gaffer? Like, are you seeing something out here in me that I'm not feeling? Because that's you know, it's funny that Dean was kind of didn't really cop to that, but apparently he Dean was trying to sub him off, and Wilf said, no, I think I'll stay.
You want to hear a dirty little secret? I mean, I hope this doesn't happen, but I'm just as interested in hearing him behind the microphone after a bad performance and a tough loss. Curious to see and hear how his tenor might change.
Yeah, because he's all smiles after a big win. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think there's still a lot to find out about Wilfred Zaha as the season rolls on. So we're gonna preview the Miami match in just a minute. A quick, you know, early week preview. Just kind of turn our focus to Miami, if you will. But first, there's a couple things that we need to clean up in and around this match, Danny. And number one is the story around 51,000, smallest home opener so far in Charlotte FC's existence. Is this good news or bad news, Dan? It's a great question. I think there's been some folks in the media out there talking about how, well, if you're complaining about 51,000, that's a pretty darn good thing for soccer in Charlotte, considering it's a massive crowd. Right. In relation to everybody else in MLS, but are we comparing ourselves to everybody else in MLS, or are we comparing ourselves to ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, if you're comparing yourselves to yourselves, then I think it becomes a little bit of a problem, John, because 51,000 is great. It definitely felt packed in there, and I really enjoyed the vibe of the crowd and the feeling of the crowd. I had a little bit of a problem. It was too big. The crowd was too big in one way, which was – It was tough to get into the supporter section. You have supporter section tickets and there's no seats available. They did the thing again where it seemed like they didn't really start enforcing supporter section access in the 200 level until it filled up. So if you get a lot of people that don't have, you know, that might have bought a cheap ticket up in the upper bowl because they just want to get in the building, and then they go, well, I'll just go sit in the supporter section since it's general admission there and I don't have to go sit up in the top. And they're not getting their tickets checked when they go there. So then the supporters fills up. And then, like, if we're trying to go in a few minutes before kickoff and then it's like, oh, you can't get in because all the seats are taken. And then they start, like, hardcore checking people's tickets to see if they're actually supporters. Meanwhile, the whole place is filled up with people that didn't have the tickets. It's a problem for sure. I mean, I don't expect to get, you know, the best seats that I would want in the 100 section of the supporters when I'm going in very close to kickoff. But I do expect to have plenty of good seating available in the 200 section. So, and even to the very top of the stadium, I couldn't get in. So in that sense, it was bad news. It was too many people. In another sense, it almost was not enough people because, as you say, comparing ourselves to ourselves, 2022, we've got 74,479 MLS record at the time, most ever to see an MLS match. It was great. It was even more packed. I had an easier time finding a seat that day than I did on Saturday. But we go from 74 down to 69 in 23, 62 in 24, and then 51 in 25. It's a pretty precipitous drop. It's a near. It's about a 40% drop from 2022 to 2025. That's dicey when you think about it. I want to know, do you think it was like, for me, the afternoon game was great. I was like, afternoon home opener? Hell yes, that's great. We can go in the afternoon. We can get it done. We can, like, enjoy ourselves. And then, like, you have the ability to just – you could still go do something later that night if you wanted. You could go home and cook dinner. You could go out on the town. You could do whatever you wanted. You know, I went and picked up my daughter from one of her extracurricular activity events that she had going on. So you could do a lot of things with that extra time. And so I love the afternoon kickoff. Other people might be like, afternoon kickoff, it's tough to get childcare. I'm not sure. You know, I would actually, I know there's some people that would have preferred a 7 o'clock kickoff. I don't know if you think the time made the difference or if it's a decline in interest or maybe it's a, you know, there's been all the off-season moves that we've talked about in previous episodes with the corporate restructuring and changes in the ticket office and things like that. Maybe they just struggled to make as many sales. But 51K to me, comparing us against ourselves, I don't like the number, John.
Well, yes, against ourselves for sure. Another way to look at this is in year four, it's pretty good. I mean, when you think about just kind of the way new products get launched and all the excitement around a new product and then 4 years later, how's that product doing? And I think from a casual point of view in the city, I think Charlotte FC is very well known. I think Charlotte FC has casual fans. I think that they do show up to matches, but in the very beginning, they showed up to matches because they've never been to one before. And now that they've all been to a match, they pick and choose which games they want to go to. And so I think 51,000 is a good number for an MLS home opener. I certainly do. I think the atmosphere was strong. I think it was good. But I think my overall takeaway is, you know, the former president of the club, Joe Labou, a ticket specialist. And I think when you look back at those numbers, when you talk about home openers, when you talk about ticketing success for Charlotte FC, a lot of that, you know, fell on Joe Labou's desk. And he did a really nice job. And when you see the crowd at 51,000, that percentage drop that you talked about compared to previous years, which by the way, with teams with not a Wilfred Zaha on the team with a star,
right, and not as good a weather, like the 2023 opener and 24 openers were not great weather. They were cold nights.
It was cold. Yeah, it was super cold last year.
And we had a warm afternoon. This, you know, that was just beautiful.
Yeah, so I think there would have been more fans in the building if Joe Labou was still working as president of this club in the ticket office and was able to strategize this offseason to get this game packed like the first 3 years. I think that's a fact.
And definite fact.
I'm willing to say that just because the proof is in the pudding. It's already happened. And I think it would have happened again. We'll see. I don't think it's this huge issue because 51,000 is a good amount of fans. For sure.
And it becomes, we don't know the breakdown in terms of how many of those were first, it was their first ever match. You know, there's still room to be attracting new fans inside of a smaller overall number and things like that. That's why we got one last soundbite here, which is Dean talking about the support and what he saw. He didn't get into the numbers per se, but he did bring up a very interesting point, which is it's very important how many show up to your home opener, obviously, but it's more important how many you inspire to come back. So let's listen to that, and then we'll see, you know, what do you think? Did the overall performance inspire people to come back?
It was great. I mean, I've got my factor 50 on, but it was great. There was a nice breeze on the pitch as well. But the crowd were great as normal, you know, great following, great support. And, you know, I keep saying it, you know, I don't know how many was here today, 50-odd thousand, but I want them to come back. And I've said many times, the way to keep them coming back is history. We haven't got a lot of that. We're only 4 years old this year. So winning football games is the main reason you're going to keep fans coming back. So we need to keep winning football games. Really pleased for them, with them. You know, we knew, and it was mentioned in the dressing room before, how much this game meant to the supporters. And I said to them, go out there and play for the supporters today. But it meant a lot to our players today as well, and you could see that. And, you know, building that, continuing to build that connection between us and the fans is really important for this club moving forward.
I like the way that Dean talks about history there, because that is important. Building history at a club, building tradition generationally. You know, you went to the game with your dad, and then now you go with your son. Like, that doesn't exist. Or your daughter. That doesn't exist here for Charlotte FC. So as that culture builds, getting this first generation of fans in and continuing to come back is a really, really fun goal. And I think we're seeing it be successful. I think I would expect crowd size to be around 20,000 to 25,000, half of that. 25,000 would be a good crowd number for most matches this season. And I'm good with that, because the lower bowl only, I think, holds what?
30.
I think the lower bowl holds just less than 30, around that. And it could be wrong. I don't have it in front of me, but there's a limit when the upper bowl's
there. Yeah, there's only so many seats.
So there's going to be plenty of fans here. But hey, I've got one more thing I want to talk about as far as supporters are concerned. I didn't get a chance to say this when you're talking about supporters section. Just an idea for those of you out there who do sit in the supporter section or have season tickets in the supporter section. I don't think that there like should be assigned seats, but what if you got assigned sections? Like, what if you could, what if there was like, okay, so I hear this, right? I know that the supporters groups and everybody that makes all the noise, brings all the flags, all the
march,
bangs
the
on marchers. Drums.
Yeah,
all those people, right? They should be up front or be wherever they want to be, and they make an effort to get up front. And I know they get mad when other people are up front, right? So why don't you just make a ticketing tier in the supporter section? Why don't you just decide whether you can be down below or upstairs?
Right. And 100s or 200s, designated on the ticket.
If you want it, you get. There's two different supporters tickets: the 100 supporters and the 200 supporters.
Yeah.
And how those are priced, I don't care if they're priced differently or not. It doesn't matter to me. But I think that this whole culture of having to get there early, getting in the first couple rows, that's where you are, and then having people that bought $15 tickets jam up the supporter section that people have season tickets, that just doesn't work for me.
Right.
This is a professional organization. This is David Tepper Sports and Entertainment. This is a stadium that hosts the NFL, some of the biggest musical acts in the world. It just feels like super JV. Like, let's step it up and turn this into a more professional environment in that supporter section. As far as, if you pay to be in the supporter section, you better be able to get a seat.
Yeah, I mean, I that's why I didn't rush back, because that's why I stayed in the low supporters bar for the early part of the second half and saw both the goals on the big screen instead of, you know, in front of my eyes. It was because I was in no hurry to get back and fight people to try to find a seat. I was lucky enough to have like the last freaking seat available in the 200s for the first half, and I didn't know that I had no guarantee that I was going to get that seat back when I went back. So yeah, I like your idea. It's just a matter of enforcement. They have to be enforcing it from the jump. They can do it. It's just a matter of the willpower to do it. But we're on to Miami, John.
We are.
We're on to Miami.
We're on to Miami. And what does that mean this week? It means that Charlotte FC is heading to Miami-Dade County. Actually, is it Miami-Dade County?
I don't think it's Fort Lauderdale. Or I don't know. Who knows where it actually is.
It's not Miami-Dade.
Yeah,
I didn't mean that as a joke, but I think it ended up being one. What is the county that Fort Lauderdale's in? I don't think it's Miami-Dade. I've been to Fort Lauderdale many times in my life. I'm upset that I don't know this. But I'm not going this weekend.
No.
And I won't be there on Sunday, but Wilfred Zaha, Dean Smith, and Ashley Westwood and this whole crew, Brant Bronico, will. What's your expectations here? Just lay it down on the line. Will Messi play? Do you expect him to play in this match? He didn't play this past weekend. Is that correct?
He did not play against Houston, no. And Suarez put on a masterclass, and they rolled 4-1 anyway. So they didn't even necessarily need him on the road at Houston. You got to remember, Miami's still currently playing in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. They have a first leg matchup against Cavalier, which I don't know where Cavalier is in the world, but in North America, but Cavalier, I'm going to guess, is like some type of Central American club, maybe a Costa Rican club. I'm looking it up right now. But they're a Jamaican club. Cavalier is a Jamaican club. Forgive me.
Are they going to Jamaica or is Cavalier?
They're at home. They're at home. Okay. So, yeah.
So Miami's got two home matches. And I don't think Messi probably doesn't play in that match. Or if he does, just plays a short amount of minutes. It's an important competition. I think Miami's trying to win the Champions Cup. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
Probably winning that trophy is more important than beating Charlotte FC this weekend.
Probably.
But
I just don't think
that matters. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I expect Messi to play at home for sure.
Yeah, I don't see Messi not playing. I think, again, it's a first leg against Cavalier, and they know that they're probably much they could lose that tie and still go to Jamaica on the second leg and win it back if they needed to. So I do think Miami is prioritizing the Champions Cup, but I don't see any reason for them to play games. That match is on a Thursday night, and so the Charlotte-Miami match is on a Sunday. Should be plenty of time to rest and recover, especially being at home. So I don't anticipate any lineup shenanigans or anything like that. It's a matter of can you go into Messi's house and shut him down and beat him?
You know, based on everything that I said on this show, I think my expectation is a loss. And the reason why is because three of the first four halves of the season haven't been good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can the second half against Atlanta carry over into an away game on the road at Miami? It could, because the team does have momentum right now. There's no doubt about that. It could. But I am kind of a need to see it to believe it right now when it comes to Charlotte FC's road performance. Probably should have lost at Seattle. Could have lost at home against Atlanta. 3 points in this match and all of a sudden a good performance, I should say, right? A good performance and 3 points in this match would be absolutely huge. Another clean sheet. That's one thing we didn't touch on. Like a lot of people were acting like, you know, maybe the defense would take a step back this season, mm-hmm. but it's a clean sheet at home against Atlanta. Maybe another clean sheet this weekend in Miami. If there's a clean sheet win in Miami this weekend, I am thinking supporter shield. Simple as that.
Yeah, right. Especially depending on the performance that if Zaha and Pep shine and Ajmong, you know, is able to get a goal. Remember, he's had he had a red card against Miami last year. Miami's actually had red cards in both of their MLS matches this year. One was in the 90+6, so it doesn't really count. But they will be, you know, they're dealing with a little bit. Miami has yet to lose a match in 2025, whether it's preseason, Champions Cup, or league. They have a couple of draws, but it's a tall test. It's a tall task, and it's a great one. And it doesn't get much easier because, John, we were looking at the upcoming match, I think, on like March 28th or 29th, forgive me the date, but San Jose coming to the Fortress at towards the end of March. And it's like they're off to a great start with 6 points out of two matches. So we thought it was like tough stretch and then just get to San Jose. Now San Jose under Bruce Arena, they're looking like they might be a club reborn. So the tough matches just keep rolling. Miami, Cincinnati, now San Jose looking tough. So there's no rest for the weary. It's time to just go down and do it. And I think if necessary, Will Saha's going to have a go at his guys again because it's certainly made an impact this time. And I don't think he wants to lose. He doesn't care about Leo Messi. You know, he wants to. I want to win. I had a little bit of a go at the guys because I want to win. And I think you have that mentality and you can win every time.
we'll see what happens. It's this Sunday, a featured match, I believe, on the MLS calendar. It's a Sunday match. Any of these matches on Sunday, I believe, have a standalone window. So this will be a standalone MLS game on Sunday. So get ready to spend Sunday afternoon. Get yourselves together. Get with some friends. Have a little Sunday afternoon, a little Sunday fun day. Charlotte FC, the season is, and Dean mentioned this in one of his cuts we played on the show. We're officially in the rhythm of the Charlotte FC 2025 season. So we're going to be here on Charlotte Soccer Show, continuing to talk about Charlotte FC. It's been a really fun start to the season. It's been great chatting with you, Danny. It was awesome to hang out on Saturday and make our return to the Fortress and spend some time together at the match and hit the supporters bar and see some friends there to start the season. And those memories will continue to be made as we roll on. So shout out to the Tifos. Everybody that we saw this weekend, it's great to hang out with our tremendous friends of the show. And let's get to work on maybe booking some guests coming up here on the next couple of weeks. Because there's some people that we want to talk to, including our friend Anna Whitty, who did a tremendous job as I'm walking around the stadium. And I hear Anna Whitty's voice booming in the concourse. Just unbelievable to hear that. That was truly an awesome moment.
Pretty cool.
Somebody who is a friend of ours on the show, somebody that we really love that does a great job covering soccer, not just in this community, but in the state as well and in the country when it comes to NWSL. Anna's star is rising for sure, and hearing her voice throughout the stadium was somewhat surreal, Danny.
Yep, for sure. And she deserves all the success. I can't wait for her to come back on the show at some point very, very soon. You know, and I'm thinking about that Elton John booking, Johnny. Can we get Sir Elton to come on and say, well, I think it's going to be a long, long time till Charlotte ever loses a match again. Because we've got Bronny and Westwood and Wilf. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We are the Rocket Man. How great would that be, dude? I mean, come on. You kidding me?
Absolutely fantastic. It would, for sure. So let's keep on rolling. Let's stay in the rhythm. Make sure you follow us on our platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, give us a like. Share it with a friend. Subscribe to our channel. Danny does great content. He'll be decoding the presser. Maybe be decoding the presser later this week. We'll see what happens. Those pop up on our YouTube channel. They're always fun. And if you're listening on a podcast platform, make sure you subscribe, like, review the show, tell us what you like, and drop some questions on social media for us at For the Crown Baby on X, at For the Crown Baby on Blue Sky, Charlotte Soccer City on Instagram. I'm not as active on social these days, but we'll check in on our X feed for sure. Danny's running point on our Blue Sky feed, so you can find us both there. But in the meantime, it's a pleasure hanging out with you this morning, Danny. And as always
a pleasure, Johnny.
For the crown, baby.